Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Michael and Patty Show, coming to you from the very wet and soggy Charlottetown waterfront, where it's a balmy 7 degrees. In comparison to yesterday, we had minus 14 wind chill. I just had to hide in my little cavernous office. How is Patty today?
I'm doing very well. Went to a Charlottetown Islanders game last night and had a fun night. We did lose, but it was a fun evening for sure.
That's basketball?
No, that is hockey. It's at the Eastlink Center, which is a really nice...
You're a sponsor, so your head gets to be right at the top there in front of everybody.
I was on the Jumbotron last night.
It's worth going just to see that.
Yes.
Let's get right into it. We've got the stats for December out. And as usual, I always look at these and think that we just don't have the numbers to make these stats sometimes make sense. Because according to this, home sales are up 12.3%. But when you look at it, we had 119 units in 24 compared to 106. So home sales are up in December, keeping in mind that this is probably based on the closing date. New listings are up by 3.7%, 113 new listings versus 109. Our market continues to be balanced, but in slight favor of the sellers, something to keep in mind for one of our discussions moving ahead. Benchmark price, which is what the average looking house in PEI is, up 4.7% from 370,300 to 353,600.
That's a nice little climb.
Now, getting to the other thing we got is we got the association updates. When you get a hot market, which we are no longer really in, we're in a good market, but not as hot as it was, you get a million new real estate agents entering the business. That seems to be changing now because we've got 15 newbies, and then we've got 12 that have left and 3 that have transferred. So that's starting to slow down now, so there'll be less people that we don't know and have never heard of.
Yeah, some of them, though, have retired, so there'll be a few that will be...
There's two. I checked.
Okay, two. Sad one, was
only,
go.
One was only in the business for 50 years, though. I think they could just get a few more years in before they retire.
She has always been such a good realtor to work with.
Oh, absolutely. And the other one, also awesome. He was probably only in for 40, 50 years.
Yes.
Don't be a quitter.
Yeah, it's not an easy business to be in. So when you do hit those milestones, it really is it's quite the accomplishment in this business. And they look great. It's not like they've aged like the presidents do when they come in and then they go out, or prime ministers. They do still look great.
Let's talk about a situation that happened a while ago. And basically what happened is we had a house listed. This house was, you know, in a price range of the 3s to 4s, which is easy typically to sell in Charlottetown. There's typically a fairly high level of liquidity, lots of buyers in that price range. This house had lots of showings. It had multiple offers. In fact, it even had an offer on it as this showing took place. And the agent, a newer agent, showed the property. And then his client said that they wanted to put an offer in tens of thousands of dollars below ask. At this intersection, it's when I said to Patty, I said, did the agent tell the buyers, because they were my buyers I had referred out to this agent, if that there was an offer, that there has been multiple offers, there's been all kinds of tension. We also know from our stats, which is why I mentioned that, that right now we have a balanced market in favor of sellers, which means the sellers have the leverage. This is not like it was decades ago where you couldn't give away a house. We have an offer on the table. We've got other offers coming in. The advice to that agent, in my opinion, should have been, if you want this house, you're going to have to come in with a clean offer at or above asking price. And they even asked for a home inspection, which is even already been done. Whether or not the client even knew that, I have no idea. But what do you think? Do you think that would have been good advice? And of course, at the end of the day, they can do whatever they want. You're just the messenger. But they lost out on that house. Now they're homeless. They probably would have come up to that number to get that house, I would think.
Well, we don't know if they'd come up to that number. And when you said that's poor advice to the agent, I think what you meant to say was it's poor advice to the buyer client to allow them to come in, you know, 30,000 or so below list price. So understand that we are, yes, in a buyer's or in a seller's, oh my goodness, we are
balanced,
in a balanced market
in favor of,
favor of the sellers, which means when you have a property that is receiving this much attention, the first thing that tells me is this property has been priced properly, and it's not a property to come in and try to test and do a lowball offer with, and especially at a time when there's other offers, because that is a clear indication that it is priced appropriately. If you're a buyer listening to this and you're wondering, you know, you're working with a realtor, what do I do? I'm not quite sure the advice that's given to me. They don't seem to know quite how to advise you. Just know if it is a balanced market, and depending on which way it is favoring towards, which in this case, it's a seller's market, beginning of 2025, you're going to want to come in with a good, strong offer. And like Michael said, at or even above. I'm finding less are going crazy high amount above list, but even by a few thousand can make the world a difference in you getting that property.
In this price range, you're typically not going to see them coming in 20, 30, 50 above. Maybe if it was in the fives or the sixes, but the threes and the fours usually are into the first-time home buyers, entry-level buyers, and they probably just don't have the money to be tossing out another 25K. But in this case, I don't think the purchaser was aware that the basic foundation for negotiating is to know your market, and the market's balanced in favor of the sellers. But you do find, and you've had another situation where you've got agents drawing up CMAs and saying this house is probably overpriced and this, they should come in low with this and come in low with that. The way they're negotiating is based on a strong buyer's market, not a balanced market in favor of sellers. That negotiating technique is not going to work in this market. So they should be aware of the foundation for negotiating real estate deals is based on what is the market like, and secondly, what is the motivation of the seller, I think.
Yeah, and to say, well, I'm a good negotiator, we're going to get you this property for less, without doing their homework and finding out what the seller's motivation is. You know, there's so much information that a good negotiator knows to collect prior to making any statements that I'm going to get you this property at a reduced number from what it's listed at. Because that, to say that every property is priced fairly would be incorrect. There are properties that do come on a little high. However, I still advise my clients, if you feel it's high, come in with what you think it's worth if you're not in a multiple offer situation. And I would be asking, how much interest are you receiving on this property? Because it's pretty indicative as to where it's also priced, unless it's a niche kind of product.
So this particular agent, did they ever ask the buyer, given the choice, are you looking to get 10, 20, 30,000 off the asking price, or do you basically want this house at any cost? What's your priority, to have the house or to save a few bucks?
Yeah, and I've told clients too, it doesn't really matter if you do overpay a little bit for a property if your intention is to stay there for the next 5 to 10 years. If you are unsure of that, then you need to be very mindful, because if you need to flip this house out in a year or two, whether it's work relocation or, you know, family situations, you may end up, if you're lucky, breaking even or possibly taking it as a loss. But if you're going to be there for 5 to 10 years, it doesn't really matter. So to get into nickel and diming it over $1,000 or, you know, just a few thousand here or there, it doesn't make that big of a difference on your mortgage.
I think at the end of the day, the agent should have known whether the buyer wanted that property, because if they had been looking at 40 other homes and this is the only home they wanted, they're not looking for someone to think that they're master negotiator and they end up losing the house because they're not. So know what the buyer wants, know what the seller wants. We work for them, we're the messenger, but we're also there to advise them. They can do whatever they decide to do, and some people will, but at least we've armed them with the information about the market, leverage, and a bunch of other things that should prove to be helpful to them. Moving along, fees in cottage subdivisions. Any thoughts on that? Are there fees in every subdivision?
Not
cottages?
Not every subdivision has piece.
And this applies to many cottage subdivisions that are now turning into year-round waterfront residential subdivisions, just like you've seen everywhere else. But in this particular case, we're just going to call it a cottage subdivision. So the question I had is, who pays for the maintenance? Well, these subdivisions usually are started by a developer that takes a raw piece of land, chops it into pieces, sells off the lots. And a lot of different situations can happen. In most cases, the developer, because they're in the process of selling off lots, will make sure that the road's maintained and the grass is cut and everything looks bright and beautiful until the day they sell most or all of the lots. And then at that point, they either abandon it and you're left high and dry, or they form a homeowners association, or the people in that subdivision will form a homeowners association, whether that be formally set up in the form of a corporation or just word of mouth where people check in a few bucks every year. But if you are moving into a cottage subdivision, it would be good to know who's maintaining the roads, what does it cost? If there is a homeowners association, if there isn't, that may be something you'll end up having to set up if you want someone fixing your roads and cutting your lawn if you don't want to do it.
Yeah, or if you don't cut your lawn, and that's one of the covenants, and the developer, the HOA, ends up doing it for you, you could be receiving an invoice bill or a lien on your property because you're not adhering to what the covenants are, therefore the association trying to maintain the integrity and value of their properties.
Well, that's a completely different subject, but absolutely, if there's restrictive and or protective covenants, they may ask you to do certain things which will include or may include cutting your grass. Next, you remember that video from George Carlin, the world famous comedian, on BS advertising?
Yes, I do.
Remember that house we looked at the other day where it was a new house and it was advertised as an executive home. And I looked at this home and I thought, I don't know what kind of executive is going to live in this house. But I looked up the definition because I always stand to be corrected. It says, an executive home is a marketing euphemism for a moderately large and well-appointed house. Executive homes are usually constructed among homes of very similar size and type by a subdivider on speculation. In this case, it meant it was overpriced, because when I looked at it, it didn't look anything exceptional. There really wasn't anything exceptional around it, but it was an executive home.
Yeah.
With a total of 1,000 square feet finished.
Yes, I do see that. And the property that we were looking at, it's in a newer subdivision, so there's going to be lots of development and dirt being kicked up and not, I wouldn't have called it an executive style home.
You're pushing the thin line between reality and BS. And right away, you're taking credibility away. In my opinion, it would have been better advertised as a new home, feature the lifestyle and the emotions of the surrounding area rather than calling an executive home, which it wasn't. And next, we have...
Can I just say with the executive...
No, we've already moved on. We can't go back.
Well, just so that the listeners, this was an individual trying to privately sell their property. So I would like to think that we would be mindful of the words that we use if you're hiring a professional, and also be mindful if you're a buyer looking at a private sale, the words they use to create, again, false...
The grand illusion.
Correct. So...
Executive home to me, if I may step back, is a big, nice... large square footage home in an upscale subdivision. Because the word executive implies that you're making more money. So consumers being what they're like, they can't spend it fast enough. So they have to buy a big house.
Yeah, just a more prestigious kind of neighborhood home. Anyways, I just thought I'd make it clear that it wasn't a realtor anyone. It was a private sale home that we looked at.
We're getting phone calls from agents, real estate agents that are licensed in other provinces asking to show properties in PEI. And the bottom line is, if you're not licensed in Prince Edward Island, you're not showing houses. You need an agent. Just no different than me going to Nova Scotia and calling up some brokerage in Halifax wanting to show houses, and I'm not licensed in Nova Scotia. Not only do we get that, but I had a call yesterday from somebody that wanted me to list a house in Nova Scotia, a beautiful waterfront home. And I told her that I am not licensed there, so I referred her to the best agent in Nova Scotia to list it with. But if you don't have a license, you cannot operate in that market. And we do have a database online. If you Google Prince Edward Island licensed real estate agents, it will show you who's licensed and until when. And the only difference between one agent and the next is most of them are going to be a member of the PEI Real Estate Association, but it's not mandatory. So some of them may not be, which are usually agents that are really not doing a whole lot.
Yeah. So
or they're semi-retired or whatever.
Yeah. The first, most agents will just look at their MLS system to see if they can run their name. But there is a secondary database, like you said, the government site, to see if they do have a license in the province that they're wishing to show a property in, and but they're not a member of the Canadian Real Estate Association, because there's little associations all across the country, then it's not that they can't show it. They just don't get access to our MLS database.
$1 million brand new homes. Touching on that, what should I expect in a $1 million brand new home, Patty?
Higher end finishes, preferably waterfront, at least a double or triple car garage.
Well, you don't see a lot of triples, even though it's an easy and inexpensive thing to add. What about siding? This is why I brought this up. There is this so-called $1 million home, and I look at it, and it's vinyl siding. Vinyl siding, to me, is not a high-end finish.
No, I would agree.
The other thing I would look for is granite, quartz, or quartz countertops. Smart homes are a real trend. Whirlpool tubs, multimedia movie room. Maybe I'm asking too much for $1 million, but I think conceivably from what we've seen these features in this space, even less, even 850 and a quarter. Mm-hmm. We had that one recently we sold at a nice movie room, office space. You're not going to see a lot of pools here, but a pool would be nice.
A pool would be nice. And what would you say a square footage, an average square footage of a million plus home?
Here, you're not getting into big square footage. I'm 2,600.
I would say that would be probably a minimum size.
That's probably what you're going to find. You're not going to find a lot of 4,000 and 5,000 square foot homes here.
No, but I would say around 3,000. I would expect a $1 million home to have around 3,000, give or take. That would be at a minimum for me. 2,000 square feet in a million plus home with low end finishes just doesn't fit the bill.
Absolutely. I'll let you answer this next question here.
So do you get a commission if you get any offer? And
do you pay a commission to the listing agent, if you're the homeowner, if any offer comes in, whether it's full price, above full price, or not?
So the only situation, and I don't know if you've come across this, Michael, but the only situation that a seller would be responsible to having to pay commission, and this isn't if they're in a multiple offer and they get three offers all the same, if there is no conditions. And would you not say no conditions, list price? So giving the seller exactly what they want. However, where does title search fall in there, Michael, for you?
Negating that question for a moment.
Okay.
If a full price offer comes in on a property under typical listing agreements, as long as there's no conditions, the commission's payable. Do you see that happen in reality? I've seen it happen maybe once or twice. And the second time was a subdivision I was selling. And every time we brought an offer in, the vendors are all wishy-washy and they didn't know if they wanted to sell today or maybe they're going to sell tomorrow. So finally, the listing agent just said, you don't take this offer, we're going after you for the commission. And we ended up doing the deal, which is great. As far as the title search, I don't know what it has to do with anything. I could be missing something. It's a requirement to convey a house that a title search is done. So it depends how the contract's been written.
But if there is a title search, but all other conditions have been removed.
So the contract should be written that the commission's payable with the exception of the title search.
I don't believe that's how our listing agreements are written.
I wouldn't be surprised.
However, I have had clients, no, not a lot, I would say two or three in my almost 15 years of selling real estate, who actually done the title search prior to submitting an offer.
But that's redundant because a lien could be registered against that property the morning before the closing.
Oh, I realize that.
So it's big deal, fancy pants. You did a title search. It doesn't do anything.
My point is they were looking, because they were going into a multiple offer situation, they wanted to put in no conditions, and it was going to be a quick closing too. Under those circumstances, again, if they weren't in a multiple offer and they did that, I would say 100%. But I think there's a fine line or a gray if title search, because it is a condition of the contract, on the commissions having to be payable.
I don't think it would be very smart to put in an offer without a title search as part of the offer, and that title search being done the day or a few days before the closing. Because if you wanted to, as a vendor, if I saw that offer come in, if you wanted to just put a bunch of liens on the property, because they're not even asking really for a clean title because there's no title search clause. So it doesn't make any sense. And they get someone writing an offer that doesn't know what they're doing, that they're trying to act all fancy.
No, I'm just saying, get it back to the commissions being payable. Where's that fine line between title search and not title search? That's all. That's all I'm
very
saying.
Nitpicky.
I know, but
it's not even in our notes here. Do not steer off the notes. The notes are all we discuss. Use stuff as a negotiating tool. So we've touched on this before. If you have any stuff you want to include in the house, use it as a negotiating tool. Do not include it, otherwise the purchasers are just going to be negotiating on price. Whereas if you exclude your stuff, stuff being defined as washer, dryer, dishwasher, whatever, carpet in the living room, you can use these tools to get the price up, because even though there may be next to zero value on a depreciated dishwasher, the purchasers may look at it as a $1,000 item. So keep that stuff separate, and never, ever, ever use the words personal when telling buyers what you're keeping, because the word personal, and again, I Googled this, says belonging to a particular person rather than anyone else. So that's pretty vague. Anything could be personal to me.
Yeah, the stove could be personal.
The roof. I'm taking the roof with me, just like they did in Florida years ago when everything was going on down there. People were rolling up the front lawn, taking the trim and the door fells, doorknob, fuse panel, breaker panel.
Yeah,
So that's all personal stuff, right? Don't use the word personal in an offer.
And if you're a buyer listening to this, I would not trust... If your agent, your realtor said, I had a conversation with the other agent and they're just bringing their personal belongings, being their clothes and that, so we're safe to write that into the contract, please say no. Please have it outlined exactly what you want, you know, what you're expecting there to be at closing. Because I actually had this happen to me about 12 years or so ago, where when I was still somewhat of a newbie, and I felt I had clear conversations and expectations of what personal was, and that it was safe to write that into the contract. And unfortunately, my buyers at closing, who were not here, I had to do a video walkthrough for them on the closing date. I was sick to my stomach, because as I was logging into our FaceTime call, I was about to show them a completely empty house that was supposed to be completely furnished. And my blood pressure was up. My face was flushed. I didn't know what I was going to say. I wanted to vomit. And it was all because of that exact word, Michael, personal belongings. And I trusted that agent. And on that particular day, the agent said, well, they ended up deciding everything was their personal items. They left you the dining room table and chairs.
That agent represents the vendor unless it's otherwise written.
Yeah, so do not trust.
It's not about you.
Yeah, all I'm saying is I've had firsthand a bad experience with this. And if I was the buyer, which my buyers trusted me, we should have made it very black and white. And whatever the shorter list is, what are you going to take? If that's the shorter list, it needs to be written out. or if what is, you know, going to be left is the shorter list, write it out. Please do not use this term personal, because you could be showing up in an empty house.
What Patty is saying, if you were selling a bed and breakfast and it included 600 different items, rather than making a list of 600 items, make a list of the 7 items you're taking with you.
Correct.
So whatever list is shorter.
And the dishwasher, because you said dishwasher, but that's technically a fixture. So they can't take that.
You can never overdock.
I realize
that. Include the dishwasher. It doesn't hurt. It's not going to cost you much more in toner or ink or whatever you're using. What's the best way to sell all your neighbor's houses?
Price yours high.
That's right.
Yeah. It's, and I've said that we have a possible listing coming at our office in the coming weeks here. And they are, because their neighbor's house went on at a significantly higher price than what was quoted to them a year ago, because now they want an updated CMA. I know, because they'd reference the house next door, if the house next door, which is inferior to theirs, is worth this much, that means our property must be worth a much higher price. So I unfortunately have to go in next week and take a look through the house, appreciate any new upgrades or finishes, the current market condition. I already did a quick CMA on the property because I know what I'm about to walk into. I am going to be explaining to them this very case scenario, this very topic, that next door neighbors who's got their price property on the market way overpriced is going to actually help sell your property if we price your property appropriately. That one is going to sit.
And have you seen agents go out of their way to show these higher priced houses in order to sell their own listings?
Oh, absolutely. I definitely would schedule, if I had a buyer coming in to look at these two particular properties, once we have prices established, and as long as my clients heed the advice and trust and listen to me, I would definitely, if I'm showing their property, show the next door neighbors to show the value.
Next idea. Our last podcast covered things to look for in a house when you're buying in Prince Edward Island or anywhere for that matter. And two of the items that we didn't mention that I've been thinking about for the past few days is, if it's the winter, look for snow on the roof. What's that going to tell me if the house I'm looking at has no snow on it, but all the other houses have a foot of snow?
To do with the efficiency of the heat?
It's going to tell me that that house isn't very well insulated and all your heat's escaping through your roof. So the second thing is, look for massive icicles, because if your house you're looking at has these giant icicles on the bottom of the roof where the gutters are, and none of the other houses have that, again, you've got heat escaping, which is causing these icicles, which is probably two other things to look for as well in the winter.
Yeah, so it can be a good time to be looking at homes in the winter. Absolutely. And I know that you had pointed that out many, many years ago, Michael, when you used to tour me around the island and give me all the little tips and tricks and items that, as a new agent, you wouldn't know to look for. So I always appreciated that.
Next topic you brought up, selling houses off MLS and discriminating against potential buyers.
Yes.
Is this a no or a really big no?
A really big no. It's...
This is a situation where you've got someone selling their own house, and they're selling their own house and don't want an MLS. They don't want to sign. They don't want to make it public information because they want to control who's buying the house. And when I heard this and Patty told me about this, I thought, well, that's just ridiculous, because someone could buy the house and then they could sell it a year later to somebody else that they don't want in that neighborhood. Don't discriminate.
No, don't discriminate. But it also opened up when I, in encountering this, questioned, and I'm not saying that this is maybe the agenda for some private sales, but it offered a new insight into, why would a person want to sell their property privately if they think they're saving commissions? There's a whole list of reasons why it's not a smart thing and it's not safe. However, is that also a factor? Because I just never... my mind would not have conceived this to have been something that people in this day and age would even think about.
It would never enter my mind either, but obviously it's being done and it's probably not something advertised.
Well, of course.
So I guess, you know, if you're looking for houses and you're an immigrant, you need to have like a front proxy that's like a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant going to all the showings.
Or whatever the nationality, not to say it's just white, but the nationality of the homeowner, you know, if they only want their culture, their nationality purchasing it, I just, money's money and you're moving out. What difference does it make? And your neighbors will be fine and they'll be enriched by somebody probably amazing moving in to their subdivision and neighborhood.
What are the typical heating systems in PEI? Question that comes up quite often, because I know in other provinces, they have the forced air, which usually has a humidification system, sometimes central air or heat pump attached to it. That's typically not the case in PEI. What do we have?
We have oil tanks, which are, they should be fiberglass or the steel tanks. Wood, we have wood fireplaces, combination wood furnace systems. We have propane, which is very cost effective at this day and age, at this time. Electric heat, which could be convect heaters, baseboards, as well as heat pump systems. Wind, you have wind?
Well, you're not going to see wind too often, but in theory, it's available, and solar.
Okay. And then obviously the geothermal systems. When the natural gas, I'm hoping they were thinking propane. I was showing clients a property in the last week, and there was this pipe coming out, and the one buyer ended up saying, "Is that a gas line? Do you guys have gas on PEI?" They're not from here. They're from New Brunswick. And I had to explain to them that we do not have natural gas here on Prince Edward Island.
We do not have piped in natural gas. You can get natural gas for commercial purposes, but the only people I've seen use it are some of the Irving Enterprises, where they're trucking in these giant tractor trailers to deliver natural gas, but it's definitely not pumped in. Those are our heating systems. Oil, wood, propane, electric is typically what you're going to find. On rare occasions, you're going to see geothermal, which can get very expensive, but it can be very efficient.
Oh, and the other one that we never mentioned, which is a combination of electric but pellet stoves. So the wood pellets electric. I realize, but it's a combination of the two of them. That's just another one I never mentioned.
The cost of a well. I have buyers looking at a cottage and their biggest concern is it's on a common well. And they're from a province where a well can cost $100,000 or more because they're drilling through hundreds of feet of bedrock to get to the water. In PEI, the cost of a well is usually not that expensive, so it's something you can check out if you want to remove yourself from that common water system, if that is something that you're allowed to do, and the government will allow it, and the restrictive and protective covenants will allow it. Also, the environment might kick into that as well, depending on where the property is located. But in most cases, if you're on a common well system, you don't want to be. Maybe you're converting this cottage into a year-round home. You want your own water that's not being turned off or maintained by somebody else.
Yeah, again, and all those levels that they would have to go through, those layers, you know, if everything turned out fine, yeah, they're not. Our wells are not expensive by comparison, say, to Ontario, which is usually the call that I get is they're from Ontario and they're waiting for an inflated, a crazy quote for well and septic.
Right on. Let's wrap it up. We've only got another 17 seconds.
Yeah, because we promised we would keep these around 35 minutes so as not to drag them on and just out of courtesy and respect of the listeners' time checking us out every week. Thank you for listening today to The Maps, the Michael and Patty Show, the PEI podcast that helps you navigate and guide you through the buying and selling process on Prince Edward Island, and a little bit of extra tidbits and facts about Prince Edward Island while we have our little discussions in that.
Be sure to follow and subscribe us. Give us some feedback. Have yourself a great day, and we look forward to seeing you on the next show. Bye for now.
Bye for now.